sense of the segregation of crystals into chiral domains. Every few hours, Cece would poke me with the Swiffer to make sure I was alive. Hedgie was perched on her shoulder, eagerly awaiting the green light to feast on my corpse. We theorists don't really do labs, and the fanciest equipment we need is computers to run simulations. I've never even worn a lab coat, except for the year JJ made me dress like a sexy neurosurgeon for a Halloween party. Even then, it was 80% fishnets.
Conference rooms are that way.
Jack points to the right. His forearm is corded with muscle. What workout even targets those?
About 60% of the department focuses mostly on theory. More, if you include hybrid faculty like Volkov.
He gives me a sideways glance.
Nice job with the puns, by the way. Did you spend hours Googling dad jokes?
Only about 20 minutes. I'm a skimmer. Tell me, do you feel safe here?
Safe?
If over 60% of faculty are theorists, there must have been instances of slashed tires, defaced mailbox,
giant dumps on your desk.
Unless you sent every theorist an apology Fudgy the Whale on your first day. Is that an eye crinkle again?
I'm not the most popular guy on faculty, and I have yet to be invited to the department's weekly happy hour. But most people are civil. And again, I have nothing against theorists.
Sure, some of your best friends are theorists. He holds my eyes as he unlocks a door, and the single dimple makes a reappearance.
This will be your office, Elsie, if your pun game stays on point.
My fantasies of filling Jack with candy and taking a bat to him, do I need sugar, are derailed by the high window overlooking campus. And the beautiful desk, and the matching shelves, and the giant whiteboard. God, this office is spectacular. I could sit here every day, take in the hardwood smell, sink into a comfortable chair MIT procurement purchased for me, let my brain crunch away connections and expand my theories for hours, finish my manuscript. The one that's been on pause for over a year. I shiver in pleasure at the idea. Unlike at my apartment, no coconut crab bugs would try to crawl in my mouth. My life would see a 900% reduction of, may I pay this class's tuition in Dogecoin's emails? And the salary. I'd have personal finances. Real ones, not just dimes I forgot in my winter coat the previous year.
I want this office. I want this job.
I want it more than I have ever wanted anything, including that Polly Pocket set at age 5.
Do you need some privacy? A mattress? Emergency contraception?
I whirl around. Jack is leaning against the door jamb, the set of his shoulders relaxed, his frame filling the entrance. He stares at me with that lopsided smile that almost has me forgetting that we hate each other. I clear my throat. A nice office.
Just nice? You looked on the verge of something there.
I collect myself. What's the teaching load for the position again? He studies me, assessing, and I face away. I've had enough of him for today.
Do you enjoy teaching?
Of course. I lie, running a finger over a wooden shelf. It's not even dusty.
You don't,
he says, pilfering truths out of my skull.
Maybe you did before having to teach 90 classes a week, but not anymore.
It's not a question.
The teaching load is 2 classes per semester.
I palm the filing cabinet. Not too bad.
You do know that there are physics jobs that require no teaching.
I can get grants. Buy out my classes so I don't have to teach.
Grants are rare for theory. It'll take you months to apply, years to hear back. Wouldn't you rather be a full-time researcher? I turn around, hands on my hips. I'm okay with you not wanting me to get this job, but I draw the line at you not wanting me to want it. His mouth twitches.
Seems to me like you want to want it a little too much.
Jack, here you are. A young woman stomps at the door of my, okay, the office. She's only a few inches shorter than Jack, with long dark hair and an accent that I cannot place. She is gesticulating a lot. They did it again.
Did what?
Overwrote my booking of the tokamak. Can you believe it? Third time this month. What the fuck? I had it for next week, then bam, kicked from the calendar. All that bullshit about how the reactor is available to all MIT personnel? They clearly don't mean grad students. How am I supposed to fuse the plasma? In my fucking pressure cooker?
Michi, Jack sounds unfazed.
If they want me to superheat gases in my bathtub and blow up my roommate's Pomeranian, I will fucking do it. But the entire point of being employed by MIT was not having to coalesce my own antimatter. This is the worst goddamn place in the universe, and I'm going to quit this program. I should have stayed at Caltech. I should have gotten into Grandma's squirrel feeder's business.
Michi,
Jack interrupts, his voice just a touch firmer.
This is Dr. Elsie Hannaway, one of the candidates for the open faculty position. Dr. Hannaway, Michi is one of my grads.
Michi had not realized someone else was in the room. The way she turns beet purple is a dead giveaway, and so is her appalled, wide-eyed expression. I run a quick APE. Michi's smart, motivated, overworked. She likes and trusts Jack, so maybe not that smart. She's mortified her rant was overheard. Judging from her quivering lower lip, she's about to burst into tears. Uh-oh. That sucks, I say quickly. The Elsie she needs commiserates. I hate it when labs double book. I've never booked a lab in my entire life. But how hard is it to set up a functioning Google Calendar? Very, I assume. But Michi's lip unquivers. She unpurples. Right? It's not just MIT. Every place is like that. I was a grad until a year ago, and we were always the last to get access to equipment.
If by equipment you mean colored chalk.
It gets better after you graduate. The lip re-quivers. It does? I promise. I smile reassuringly. My weakness is women in STEM. I want to protect them from the structurally unequal hellfire of academia. In the meantime, I'm sure Jack will be happy to intercede.
Jack's scowl broadcasts his unfamiliarity with the concept of happiness. I'll make sure you have access, Michi.
He says, Michi, but he's looking at me. Glaring, to be precise. And when Michi scurries away with a nod, he pushes from the door and walks right up to me, a vertical line between his brows. It's almost a physical shock, redirecting from Michi, open book see-through Michi, to Jack. He's the usual blank brick wall of question marks, and I want to tear out my hair. His hair. All hair. Why does he have to be so frustrating? Why does he have to be the most unreadable?
The real girl who wished to be a puppet,
he murmurs, low and rumbly. What?
I can actually watch you do it.
Do what?
Analyze people. Turn yourself on and off.
I take a terrified step back. A combative step forward. I can't read him for shit, and he's in my head? You know, Jack, we all interact differently with different people. It's called code switching, a totally normal social skill.
Code switching has nothing to do with erasing who you are and twisting what's left of you. Have you ever even booked a lab? What equipment were you denied?
Listen, it worked. Michi was about to cry. I anticipated her needs, and there were no tears.
You lie, Elsie. Every single one of your interactions is a lie.
He crosses his arms and looms.
We're supposed to be on a tour of the department. I feel like he's taking a tour of me.
Is this what you do with Greg, too? You code switch a conjured, non-existent persona he fell in love with?
No! Jesus. Greg needs to get his ass back from yoga camp as stat as possible.
Are you doing it with me, too? His scowl deepens.
What? No! I can't even read you.
Are you turning yourself into what I want? Is that why whenever I'm with you, I...
His voice trails off, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe I've just reached critical mass. I'm dizzy. My heart's a drum in my ears. There's a single droplet of cold sweat running down my spine, and I'm sure, absolutely positive, that fighting with Jack has burned the last of my glucose molecules. My blood is 0% sugar. Fun!
Elsie?
Vision's blurry. Where's the wall? I gotta lean against the...
Elsie!
Hands, muscles, bones, warmth. I'm pressed against something and...
Elsie, what the hell is going on?
Sugar? So nice not having to stand anymore. Oh, I feel so light. Fast-acting carbs, juice, or soda, or candy. Can you? There's warm, smooth skin under my palm. Then I'm deposited on top of the desk. My desk. My future desk. Oh, God, I really hope I get this job. I'll put that Bill Nye figurine I like to pretend JJ didn't give me by the computer. My Alice and Bella Funko Pops on the cabinet, a plant on the windowsill, something vicious and carnivorous, a Venus flytrap maybe. I'll feed Jack's cactus to her. I'll feed Jack to her.
Here.
My eyes flutter open. I suspect Jack was gone for a peaceful moment, but now he's back. To witness my misery. Like those arsonists who return to the crime scene to masturbate.
Elsie, take it.
There's a bottle in front of my nose, full of a dark liquid. I pry it from his hand and take several long gulps. Instant bliss. Well, not instant. Not bliss, either. It takes a few minutes for my blood sugar to stabilize. Even then, I still feel like a cadaver. A bad one, that you get when you're in med school and show up late for anatomy lab. Should I drink more? I check my glucose level on the iTwat. Shit. My pod malfunctioned again. Delivered too much. Blood sugar's under 70 milligrams. I'll take two more sips, then wait 2 minutes, then...
You have diabetes.
I look up. Oh, right. Jack's still here. Watching me with a half-hawkish, entirely concerned expression. Taking up most of my future office in that visceral, present way of his. I need to get going with that Venus flytrap purchase. Mm-hmm.
Type 1?
I nod.
Why didn't you tell me?
I take another sip of my soda, which I'm slowly realizing is not Coke, and laugh. Why would I tell you? So you can slip Werther's Original in my tea?
Funny you mention that.
He doesn't seem to be having fun.
Since I've met you exactly 5 times so far, and during 2 of those, you suffered from some diabetes-related complication that required my help.
8 more and I get a free sub? He snorts a laugh.
With this level of self-sabotaging, you don't need outside help.
I evil-eye him half-heartedly, too tired to bicker. The only 2 times I've had glycemic attacks in the last year were in your presence. Maybe your superpower is making my pod malfunction.
You need to tell Monica.
Monica's not going to like me any less because I have diabetes. I think. His eyes harden.
You think I want you to tell her to diminish your chances? You're shitting on your chances all on your own, with the fainting around and the easily disprovable lies. I'm concerned about your health.
I take full responsibility for my health, and it doesn't affect my work. I'm not required to share my status to- You almost passed out. My pump malfunctioned. It's old and shitty, and I need a new one. But they're prohibitive without health insurance, so... Does he look guilty? Maybe. Maybe it's just resting frown face.
Does Greg know about the diabetes?
How socially acceptable would it be for me to burst into Greg's corporate bonding retreat and drag him back to Boston by the ear? He doesn't need to know. Jack's lips thin.
Is this part of your game?
My what?
This weird thing where you delete and remake yourself.
You are obsessed. And disturbingly right. Are you into conspiracy theories? Lizard people? Fictional Finland? I take another sip. God, this is bitter. The label on the bottle is in a foreign language. What is it?
Volkov's favorite drink.
What?
He has his brother send a few cases over from Russia that he rations and cherishes like liquid gold. That's the last bottle.
I'd do a spit take if I could bear to drink another sip. What?
Don't worry. I'll mention that you really needed it, Elsie. He won't mind. Much.
No. Don't tell him. Do not tell Volkov. I'm gonna find an import store. Buy a replacement. Where did you get this from? I trail off. Jack's dimple is back. He's smiling. Evilly. It's not really Volkov's, is it?
He shakes his head.
I hate you, I say without heat.
I know.
He grabs the bottle, takes a sip, scrunches his nose in an almost cute way. Does he know my lips were right there?
Disgusting. I stole it from the student lounge. Only non-diet soda I could find.
You just stole from a grad student? I laugh.
Yeah, an unexpected low.
I laugh harder. Must be that sugar high. How do you sleep at night?
I have a really firm mattress. Great for spinal health.
Laughing again here, and so is Jack. I take the bottle back and sip again.
I guess we're both vaccinated. What's the harm?
God, this tastes like paint thinner.
Or a plankton isopropyl alcohol smoothie.
Oh my God. I'm laughing even more. Do I have permanent brain damage?
Are you going to be okay?
His voice is suddenly softer, more intimate. He's really standing closer than we need to be. At least he'll catch me if I fall again. Yeah, I just need a second to recover. Last sip. Is this compost juice growing on me? Maybe it's just this place. The mid-afternoon sunlight warming the hardwood floor. The shelves waiting to be filled with my books. And another second to marvel at the splendor of my future office. Jack shakes his head and smiles, almost wistful.
Sorry, Elsie. It won't be your office.
The thought is blood-curdling. You're not sorry, and you don't know the future. I'm out punning you, Jack. The teaching demonstration, it went really well. And I didn't even steal Volkov's mother's milk. I have a chance. He studies me for a long moment, silent. Then asks again,
will you be all right?
Yeah, I just need a second to...
No, I mean, will you be okay? If you lose Greg... Because I will tell him about you. And if you don't get this job, will you still be fine?
I can't immediately decipher his tone. Then I do and burst out laughing. He's worried. He seems genuinely worried about my well-being and state of mind. Which is surprisingly nice and... Maybe a tad amusing, until I realize why. He's convinced that I'll fail. And that makes me feel something. A mix of anger and fear and something else. Reminiscent of the carefree joy that comes from dancing on the graves of enemies who dared to underestimate me. What will you do if I get this job, Jack? I lean forward. My face is a couple of inches from his. Pull out your hair. Ask for the manager. Leave the department and become a Zumba instructor. He doesn't pull back. Instead, he watches me even more intently, like I'm a critter in the palm of his hand. And I contemplate the possible scenarios, the same ones that must be filling his head too. Jack Smith Turner and Elsie Hannaway, esteemed colleagues, office neighbors, academic foes. Oh, I could make his life so hard. Spread the rumor that he wraps his entire mouth around the water fountain. Put a nest of killer cicadas in the lowest drawer of his desk. Push him outside bare-eyed during an eclipse. The sky's the limit, and I want to see him suffer. I want to see him lose. I want to see him sweat it. I want to see him cry because he lost and I won. But perhaps I won't. Because if you get the job. He leans close. That slice of eye burns bright blue and his mouth curves. I'll make do. While crying yourself to sleep because I'm not George? Not everyone wants you to be someone else, Elsie. He's wrong about that, but I can smell his skin. It's good in a way that's primeval, almost evolutionary. I hate it. And I definitely wouldn't want you to be George. And why is that? He presses his lips together. He's even closer now, surprisingly earnest. It would be a waste. A waste of what? Of you. My heart skips, stumbles, restarts with a gallop. What does he even?
Jack! Dr. Hannaway, here you are. My meeting just ended.
Volkov appears in the doorframe.
I'm so sorry for running late.
Jack has taken a step back.
No problem,
he says, looking at me.
I just hope you wore something reflective.
A moment of silence. Then Volkov registers the pun and starts wheezing.
Oh, Jack, you,
he chortles. Jack's already walking out of the room, but he stops in the door for a long glance and a low,
goodbye, Elsie.
After a beat, he adds,
it was a pleasure.
8. Friction.
What do you mean you think we should leave them be?
Mom's voice is so shrill, I glance around to make sure no one overheard her through the phone. Dr. Voigt waves at me before slipping inside the auditorium, the one where I'll give my research talk in 15 minutes, and my stomach flips, omelet style. It's just, Lucas is very stubborn. Short of locking him in my dishwasher, I'm not sure how to stop him from acting up. I hasten to add before Mom asks me to do just that, and I think he'll be okay if we give him space to sulk.
What about Thanksgiving?
What about Thanksgiving?
What if he's not done sulking by Thanksgiving? Where do I seat him? What if he doesn't show?
Your aunt will say that I don't have my family under control, that she should host next year. She's been trying to steal this from me for decades. Mom, it's January.
And?
I spot Jack and Andrea coming my way, laughing, Michi, and a gaggle of grads in tow. He's one whole head taller than the crowd, like at every single Smith gathering, and wears a gray, long-sleeved Henley that manages to look simultaneously like the first thing he found in the laundry hamper, and a high-end piece tailored to showcase that protein is his favorite macronutrient. Haute Couture by Chuck Norris.
Oh, I wish he didn't nod at me with that stupid smirk. I wish he wasn't amused by my glare. If by November things aren't better, I'll look into rope restraints and cheap storage space. I promise. I gotta go, Mom. I'll call you back tonight, okay? I hang up to find a good luck email from Dr. L, who hasn't quite mastered text messaging yet, and smile. At least someone cares. I'm so, so sorry about yesterday, Monica says, arriving in a flurry of clicking heels. Her eyes knife into Jack's monstrous shoulders, and I do love how committed she is to despising him. Truly warms my high-risk cardiovascular system. I left you with Jack for so long. I had no idea Sasha was late. Men, so unreliable. Not a problem. It's not even a lie. Last night, I managed to put in 2 solid hours of email answering before dinner, and I didn't even doze off when Cece told me all about the recent breakthrough in her analysis of the Odessa Steps, i.e. Act 4 of the 1925 silent movie Battleship Potemkin. We've watched it together before, multiple times, since I made the rookie mistake of pretending to love it the first. But last night, I was considerably less tired than usual, and my theory is that Jack's the reason. Here's the deal. Things between him and me are unsalvageably bad. I'll never conjure an Elsie able to please him, especially since he's figured out my APE strategies. And as much as I hate knowing that there's someone out there whom I cannot win over, it also lets me off the hook. With Jack, I don't need to be someone else, because I can't be someone else. It's unsettling and disturbingly bearing and also relaxing. Basically, I had fun with Jack Smith Turner, a phrase never before uttered by a human tongue. Have I been doing it all wrong? Maybe instead of getting people to think that I'm worth their time, I should stop giving a shit about them? Food for thought. On the positive, everyone who's had one-on-ones with you adored you, Elsie. Monica grins. And the students, glowing feedback. I think we got this in the bag. You just need to nail this research talk. No pressure. On it, I smile. Her hand settles warmly on my shoulder. You'll be such a wonderful asset to the department. 10 minutes later, after Monica has introduced me to a packed auditorium, I suspect mandatory attendance, I can still feel the weight of her fingers. She mentioned the Forbes 30 Under 30, the SN10, scientists to watch, and the Young Investigator Prize, and everyone clapped. People look between me and my slides. No one seems to be nodding off yet. I'm talking about the models I created, some unpublished material I haven't had a chance to write up yet, and God, I fucking love it. The thing is, I'm good at it. Really, genuinely good. Anything else I've ever been praised for. You're so pretty, Elsie. So interesting to talk to. So funny. So extroverted. So introverted. So kind, so understanding, so pleasant, so thoughtful, so level-headed, so insightful, so crazy, so carefree, so disciplined, so intense, so laid back, is made up. A product of fog machines and carefully angled mirrors that reflect what others want me to be. But physics, I didn't fake my way into physics. And I love talking about it to other people. Not something I've been able to do over the past year, since I teach approximately 70 bajillion classes and my students are still at the apple falls on head stage of physics. I sometimes try to involve Cece in my work, but every time I mention liquid crystals, she giggles and whispers, "My precious." Which is okay. It's not exactly a party topic, but physicists? They're into it. Experimentalists love the applications, and theorists love to wonder what they were up to during the Big Bang, whether they're the real origin of life on Earth, if they can be added to a smoothie. It's a win-win. This was phase two of the model. Let me know if it's not crystal clear. I deliver the first of my three scheduled puns to a room full of chuckles. If the world is a just place, this prostitution of my sense of humor will buy me Volkoff's vote. Now, moving on to the third. Jack's in the fourth row, paying me an uncomfortable amount of attention, writing something in a notebook. At best, he's doodling cool S's. At worst, drafting an online petition to dissuade MIT from hiring a diabetic slug who pilfers imported sodas and catfishes impressionable young men. He has something planned. I know it. He knows it. We both know it. And that's why our gazes meet and hold so often. But I've practiced this talk so much, I could give it while getting my crotch waxed. Whatever you're plotting, I'm ready for it. I think at him the next time our eyes catch. He smirks back, his familiar, uneven smile. I carry on and wait for the shoe to drop. And wait. And wait. And it doesn't. Jack doesn't raise his hand to ask an unintelligible four-part question. His students don't jump out of their chairs to stage an anti-theory flash mob. Once we get to the Q&A, I peek at the ceiling, fully expecting a bucket of pig's blood. Nothing. Just Dr. Massey, raising his hand from the left side, saying, "What a deeply fascinating model, Dr. Hanaway. Some of the experimentalists here would really benefit from your collaboration." He points at a middle-aged man sitting in front of him. "Toby, you're working on pneumatics." "No, not me. It was Dr. Diehl." "No, Diehl's particles. Maybe Sasha?" The room devolves into a chicken coop, everyone talking over everyone until Volkoff interrupts.
"Wasn't it Dr. Smith Turner?"
He turns around with effort, looking for someone, and I pray he misspoke. I pray there's another Smith Turner in the crowd. I pray for a quick and merciful ending. But,
"Jack, you've been stuck on your pneumatics experiments, right? You could use this model, correct?"
I dare to glance at Jack, expecting to see him frown, to scoff, to lash back. But he says,
"Indeed I have, and indeed I could."
He smiles a little, pleased in a way that's not bitter enough for my taste. I just knocked this talk out of the park. Jack should be sobbing. Why does he look almost admiring? His eyes hold mine again. I glance away first and take the next question.
"You are a most impressive young scientist," Volkoff tells me, pausing to pop a bacon-wrapped mushroom in his mouth. "A rising star with a bright career ahead of you."
I'll make sure to buy sunglasses. I watch him cackle his way to the canapé table, hoping he won't be back. The interview went well, but I'm ready for it to be over. The shindig at Monica's place is the home stretch. Ostensibly, an informal reception meant to convey the amiable culture of the department and the convivial rapport among its faculty members. But I've been to tons of these back at Northeastern, and all they manage to show is that we academics are awkward, resentful nerds unable to interact with our colleagues without liters of ethanolic lubricant, which have by now been distributed. The room ranges from buzzy to outright drunk. The conversation from PS5 games to gossip about the grad students. Cole is universally loathed, had a soul patch phase, once tried to organize an orgy in the spectroscopy lab. I should introduce him to Uncle Paul. Monica's house is fancy and sprawling, and I shouldn't be shocked. She is a big shot. Of course, she has KFC buckets of money, Many of those who manage to stick around academia till the full professor stage do, right? It's just, the income difference between tenured faculty and people like me is gaping. Maybe scholars move up from the poverty line and forget all about how they used to jerk awake to coconut crab roaches crawling on their skin. Maybe there's a switch in the brain that teaches people the difference between hors d'oeuvres and amuse-bouche and makes them want to drop serious cash on cow skull wall decor. I sip the club soda I pretend to splash with gin and mutter, God.
Pretty sure God left this department years ago.
Someone whispers above my ear. I turn and it's Jack. Of course it's Jack. The electron to my nucleus, constantly spinning around me in the most annoying of orbits. He's so close, I have to tilt my chin. And from this perspective, it strikes me again how handsome he is. Like a picture in an airport store that sells fancy perfume.
Stop frowning,
he orders. And at first, I automatically smooth my forehead. Then, I frown harder. Don't tell me what to do.
Come on, Elsie.
The corner of his lips twitches.
I didn't even ask you to smile.
He's standing in the door, one hand on each side of the doorframe. His biceps brushes against my hair, but I won't step out of reach. I was here first. Also, I'm clearly 12. Did you need something?
Just checking in, making sure you've eaten enough.
I roll my eyes. I did. Thanks, Daddy. My blood sugar is at 120 milligrams. I'm killing it.
Thought so, since you're not lying face down on Monica's.
He glances at the rug beneath my feet and his nose scrunches.
Dead Dalmatian?
I think it's cowhide.
Ah, that explains the skulls on the wall.
They really... I clear my throat. Tie the whole room together?
You think she killed them herself?
Why? Afraid you're next?
Of course. Monica's terrifying.
I laugh. There's nothing Jack can do to make me look unhirable now. We're just two friendly archenemies chatting at a party. No one's paying attention to us, which feels oddly nice. Isolating, but restful. Because Jack expects nothing from me. Are you and Andrea dating? I ask. Because I can, and I'm curious.
No.
He seems surprised.
Why?
I shrug. I see you together a lot. That's who he was chatting with while Volkov soapboxed about competitive duck herding.
We're friends. We collaborate. We're the only two faculty members under 35.
He takes a sip of his beer.
I don't date much.
Right. That's what Greg said, too. What bugs me is I'm positive that Andrea, an otherwise brilliant woman, thinks Jack's a nice guy. And that Michi thinks he's a good mentor, judging by how comfortable she feels interacting with him via meltdowns. About anyone else, these would be green flags, but I know better. So, I say, your pneumatics experiments are going poorly?
Indeed. How did you know? Oh, right. You were there when Volkov announced my repeated failures to obtain decent results to a 300-person auditorium.
The self-deprecating smile is back, and so is the dimple. I don't want to laugh again, but it's hard. I've had a long day. I kind of liked it. In fact, I think I had an orgasm when it happened.
I bet.
His eyes darken around the blue wedge. On a scale from taking a CrossFit class to writing parody articles as a form of activism, how mad are you that someone suggested you use a model of mine?
What's a CrossFit? And why would I be mad? My lab discussed the application of your model in our meeting today.
I lean back to search his eyes.
What? Michi bragged to everyone that you guys are friends. She followed you on Twitter, I think.
I don't have Twitter.
I did tell her you probably aren't at SmexyElsie69.
Wait, are you serious? Are you really going to apply my model?
Of course.
But it's a purely theoretical model. He shrugs.
We've been stuck for months. And it's brilliant. And like I told you multiple times, I've always incorporated theoretical models and collaborated with...
Stop. I turn to face him directly and get half wedged under his arm. We look like we're about to embrace. In a Game of Thrones, stab you while I hug you way. Listen, I... Stop this, please. I don't know what you want from me. I've been adjuncting for a year, and it sucks so much. So much. I just want a job in a good department to continue with my research.
You deserve it,
he says quietly. I feel the words for irony. Find no trace. Stop it, I repeat. I don't know what game you're playing, but...
Game?
He scowls.
I just said that I hope you get the opportunity to continue your work because you clearly are one of the great minds of our generation.
I tense. I don't need your condescending praises. He shakes his head. His hand comes up to my chin, straightens my face to better study me, which he does for endless seconds before asking,
What happened to you, Elsie?
Excuse me? I feel flayed alive when he looks at me like that, stripped to my bones.
Every time I mention that I admire your work, you become dismissive and combative.
No, I don't. Or do I? Maybe if you didn't spend half your time reminding me that I'm on par with a skanky villain from a mid-2000 CW show,
I am able to multitask.
He sounds not upset, but... on his way, not his usual detached self.
I can admire you as a scientist and at the same time resent what you're doing to my brother.
Allegedly doing to your brother. And am I being needlessly antagonistic? No. No, Jack and I are antagonists. Insulin and glucagon. Rey and Kylo Ren. Galileo and... the entire Catholic Church circa 1615. It's hard to believe that you respect me when all I know you for is dissing the very people who do my job and advocating for George to be hired.
That has nothing to do with you and everything with George, who you know nothing about.
Right. Maybe if I met him and heard all about his 1.5 publications, I'd withdraw my application in cowed admiration. Jack's eyes widen.
What?
He bites the inside of his cheek.
Elsie, you're operating on some pretty big assumptions.
Elsie, here you are. Monica crosses the cowhide toward us. She looks at me, then at Jack, then at me again.
I thought you might need some saving,
she murmurs in my ear. Judging from his half-smile, Jack heard too.
I was just making sure she still wants to work with us after Christos put his hand down his waistband while trying to convince her that cereal is technically soup.
Jack's tone is once again amused, relaxed. He does make some valid points, I interject before Monica field dresses Jack on the cowhide. Monica, this evening has been so lovely. Thank you so much for having me in your beautiful home.
But of course. Have you met my family?
Your husband, yes. His research is fascinating. He's an evolutionary biologist. We teared up together over the tawny frogmouths, who mate for life and let themselves starve by the body of their dead partner. Good times.
What about Austin, my son? He just got home. He's staying with us. Currently between careers. Looks like spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to major in golf management was not a good investment.
Her smile is tight.
Did you know Jack and Austin hang out?
Oh, I look between Jack and Monica, who seem to find the fact, respectively, amusing and teeth-grind-worthy.
We play basketball at the same gym,
Jack explains. His voice vibrates through me like he's very close.
On Sunday nights,
right during our family dinner, which Austin hasn't attended in weeks.
Maybe you should install a hoop in your living room.
He points at the wall.
Right there, between those two fossils.
Maybe you should install a hoop up your... Oh, there he is. Austin, dear, let me introduce you to our guest of honor. A tall man resentfully stops staring at his phone to come to us. He's handsome in a common, forgettable kind of way, and initially, I think that's why he looks vaguely familiar. But as I watch him exchange a friendly handshake with Jack, I realize it's more than that. I'm positive that I've seen him before. Where, though? I cannot place him. One of my students? No. He must be in his late 20s. Then it hits me. When Monica says, "Austin, this is a future potential colleague, Dr. Elsie Hannaway." Because Austin's response is to give me the once-over, snort, and then say, "No, she's not." And that's when it occurs to me that the last time I met Austin Salt, he offered me $70 to have sex with him. 9. Escape velocity.
Fuck, 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 fuck.
Oh, it was my 5th or 6th date through Faux 4 years ago, and Francesca, the app manager, was scrambling to find someone last minute.
"The client doesn't even want a preliminary meeting," she told me over the phone.
I was running across campus from an astroparticle seminar to an intro to physics TA meeting, frantically dodging gaggles of undergrads.
"All he needs is arm candy." His words. "It's the formal inauguration of a new golf course and he wants to impress his boss. If someone asks, you met through friends a couple of months ago and work in insurance. Background check's good and he'll pay extra for short notice. You in?"
Rent was due in a week and I had a grand total of 2 rotten bananas in the fridge. So I wore one of the 3 cheap cocktail dresses Cece and I had gone halvesies on, watched a winged eyeliner tutorial, and, in the cab ride to the suburbs, got myself carsick editing a fellowship application due the following day. Austin had gelled back hair and answered the phone with,
"Talk to me."
Not a bad client as much as an absentee one. Arm candy seemed to be code for pretty wallpaper, which meant that my job was to sit at our table, smile widely when he introduced me as Lizzie, and wonder why the fancy asparagus crepes were decorated with strawberries. There was lots of downtime, which I used to do some grading, phone hidden under the expensive linen tablecloth. At the end of the night, he gave me a ride. We chatted about the hows and whys of golf till we got downtown, at which point he offered me $70 to have sex with him. I said no. To be fair, he started lower. And to be fairer, I had to say no several times, peppered with a few yeses when questions veered to,
"Are you serious?"
And,
"Are you saying people pay you to just look hot next to them?"
And,
"Are you really going to act like a bitch?"
I wasn't too scared because we were on a non-deserted sidewalk. I turned on my heels and ignored him as he yelled,
"You're not even that hot. Your tits are tiny and your makeup is shit."
The following day, I told Francesca, who made a gagging noise on the phone, ask the million-dollar question, "God, Elsie, why are men?" and blocked him from the client database. For the following fake dates, I made an effort to do better makeup and use push-up bras. As a people pleaser and a graduate student, I was primed to take all sorts of constructive criticism to heart. And that was the end of it. Or just an intermission? Because when Austin looks at me and snorts and says, "No, she's not," the temperature around me drops. I look into Austin's resentful eyes and my nerves screech. My brain ices over and then shatters into a million tiny razor-sharp fragments that crash noisily into my skull. I know that I am fucked. Well and truly fucked. Monica gasps.
For God's sake! Voight's about to spill his wine glass on my Fendi chair.
She scurries away, and I cannot breathe.
What are you doing here?
Austin takes a step closer, and the smell hits. He's been drinking. I'm going to puke in the cow skull. Hi, Austin. How are you? I sound solid, I think. Self-assured. But he ignores me.
Honestly, it's a good move. You kinda sucked as a hooker.
My shoulder blades make sudden contact with something hard and warm. I must have physically recoiled and pushed back into... Jack is behind me, witnessing all of this, cross-referencing notes about how terrible I am with Austin. Shit. Shit!
What did you just say?
He asks.
You ever hire her?
He points at me with his chin. I can't see Jack's face, but I hear the frown in his voice.
Elsie is a physicist.
Austin laughs. It blends seamlessly with the chatter in the background because people are still eating, drinking, arguing, while my professional life falls apart.
Dude, no way. Elsie here is like an escort.
Anger bleeds into my panic and I stiffen. This is incorrect, I hiss. Not that there would be anything wrong with it, but Faux is a fake dating app, which you'd know if you read the terms and conditions you agreed to when you signed up. But you're too busy whacking balls around with a crowbar to learn basic literacy or how to treat your fellow humans with respect. Step away from me, or...
At least I'm not some kind of hooker who doesn't even bother to fuck her clients. Hey!
Jack's palm closes around my arm and pulls me back into him like I'm an unruly child who might walk into traffic. His voice is low and menacing, and I feel it reverberate through my own skin.
Austin, you heard her. She asked you to step away.
Austin lets out an ugly laugh.
This is my house. Then go to your room and play with your Transformers figurines. Leave her alone.
Jack, I paid her to go out with me.
You don't understand. I understand what I'm seeing. So listen to me, asshole.
Jack's tone is chilling, terrifyingly calm. Austin pales and takes a small step back, and I almost feel sorry for him.
You're harassing a woman who asked you to get out of her personal space while she's at a work function. Because she rejected you. But I paid her to- I don't care. She asked you to leave. Get the fuck out of my sight.
Austin doesn't want to leave. It's clear in his flared nostrils, in his twitching jaw while he stares at the place above my shoulders where Jack has taken up residence. But he doesn't stand a chance. After a few frustrated seconds, he mutters,
"Fuck this."
And finally takes a step back. My heart starts beating again.
One more thing,
Jack adds. Austin swallows.
What? If you say anything about this to anyone, including your mother, I'm going to make sure you regret it for a long, long time. Understood?
Austin presses his lips together and nods once. Tight. Then he disappears into the crowd, into another room, and I free my arms and turn around, meaning to, I don't know, thank Jack, explain myself, play off what just happened as a fever dream. Problem is, he's staring down at me, watching me with sharp, inflexible eyes that miss nothing, and he sees everything. Every molecule I am built of. He could list it, describe it, reproduce it in a lab. He sees the rebar structure in me, and I see nothing. I understand nothing. I still have no idea what he wants me to be. Jack, I say, a barely there whisper. But he can hear me. He can hear everything. Jack. I shake my head. And then I can't stand to be seen anymore. So I take a step back and weave my way through the room, looking for Monica to make my excuses. 10. Inertia.
In hindsight, Cece muses while nibbling pensively on a piece of Gouda, we should have seen this coming. Boston's population is 700,000. Say half are men and half of that 21 to 40, Foe's target demo. Now, Foe's not cheap, and the masses are getting poorer while Jeff Bezos ruthlessly profits off my desperate need for one day shipping of dill pickle lip balm. So maybe only a fourth of the dudes can afford to hire us. And of that fourth, half is either in a happily committed relationship or has morals. Now, consider that we've been doing this for about 4 years, fake girlfriending an average of 2 clients a month. If we crunch the numbers, she looks at me expectantly. I consider pretending I'm not a human calculator, then give up.
96 men, I sigh. And their family and friends, in a pool of 21,000. Cece holds a carrot to Hedgie, who takes a delicate nibble.
Which makes the probability of us coming across someone we met through Foe in our private lives? Time to nerd out, nerd queen.
Bayesian probability or frequentist? Cece's grin is my favorite of hers, with the tongue sticking out of her teeth.
Doesn't matter. The point is, it's possible that in our quixotic quest to make enough money to pay our taxes, something Jeff Dill Pickle Bezos is not asked to do, by the way, we fucked up. A good assessment.
I let my forehead slide to the table. It's cold and sticky with something that might not be Hedgie's urine. What if Austin tells his mother that I'm some kind of con woman who tricks her clients into
not fucking her? Did he look like he might want to talk to Monica?
Once Jack was done with him, he just looked scared. Shitless, one might add. But also angry. And angry people do angry, stupid things. Like climbing on top of a toilet in the men's restroom with Jack Smith Turner's hands pressed into their waist. Or forgetting to monitor their glucose levels. God, what a shit show of an interview. At least the most disgraceful moments happen behind the scenes. Yay for semi-private humiliation. I don't know.
Either way, as a mother myself, Cece says with a meaningful glance at Hedgie, if my douchebag kid came to me whining that the rising star of theoretical physics denied him an $70 hand job, the audacity of that bitch, I'd exclusively be angry at my douchebag kid.
I straighten and sigh again. The Gouda's predictably gone, so I pick up the carrot and take a small bite, avoiding Hedgie's corner. Though, why, really? How bad could toxoplasmosis be? Not nearly as painful as the way Jack stared at me after everything. Like he could break me down into the smallest diatomic molecules with a look and a handful of words. Better take my chances with the salmonella. I need to talk to Jack. Explain what Austin said. Cece scoffs.
You don't owe him anything.
He helped me, though. Without him,
He stood up for you when some shit-faced man-boy verbally harassed you, Elsie. It's the bare minimum. The bar's so low, you could pick it up and beat him with it.
Okay. So maybe I don't need to talk to Jack. I want to, though. I want to explain to him that what, really, what? He must have put together that what I'm doing with Greg is similar to what I did with Austin. And if he hasn't, didn't I decide 2 days ago that I don't care what he thinks of me? That he's a lost cause anyway? If I don't get the MIT job, I'm never going to meet Jack again. And if I do, we'll be cordial, distant enemies. He's still the nutsack who turned 17 and decided to declare war on an entire discipline, my discipline. So he's the one guy I can't read,
The one person who can't be APE'd. All the more reason to never voluntarily interact with him again. I just don't know why it's scorched into my stupid brain that last glance he gave me as I stepped out of Monica's home. And the earlier one, when he grabbed my chin and studied me like I'm something unique. My own Cartesian coordinates. What happened to you, Elsie? I square my shoulders. You're right. Greg's the one I need to talk to. Warn him that Jack might ask questions. Give him time to prepare answers. Greg's the reason I was keeping secrets all along. He's the one who deserves protecting. In the meantime, no more foe. I look at Cece. Should you quit too? You'll be on the job market once you're done with your thesis. What if this happens to you too?
It won't be until next year. We might be dead by then.
Would be nice, wouldn't it? We exchange smiles.
I must say the situation is making me reconsider, foe. Then again, the number of dollars in my bank account is making me reconsider my reconsiderations.
She taps her chin.
It's a good reason to keep working with Kirk.
I frown.
Kirk? Yeah, that guy who—
I know who Kirk is. I just thought, you've been talking about him a lot, and you refer to him by his first name.
How else should I refer to him?
Historically, your clients have been, you know, Big Nostrils Jim, not Anderson Cooper, Doomsday Prepper Pete, Anchovy Breath 1, Anchovy Breath 2, Deep V-neck, Anchovy Breath 3.
I get the gist.
Kirk is always just Kirk, which has me wondering if—
Whoa.
Her eyes widen dramatically.
Am I being attacked? In my own home?
No, I just—
At my own table?
I shake my head. No, I—
On my own chair that I retrieved from the curbside and that used to have bedbugs and maybe still does?
No, I didn't mean to. I notice Cece's sly smile.
You're evil.
She laughs.
Is Greg still on that hippie retreat where you pay to weed their flower beds? When's he coming back? And when is the search committee voting on the candidates?
Is she trying to change the topic? I have no idea. I don't even know if George has already been interviewed. Greg should be back by the weekend, but he'll have tons of messages and—
And he'll see a million texts from you. He'll call the second he turns on his phone. You'll calmly explain what happened and you'll come up with a plan together.
Don't worry about it, okay? I nod. As it turns out, Cece is right. I do get a call from Greg the moment he comes back to civilized society. But she's also wrong, because things don't go the way she predicted. Not at all. Not even a little bit. My first thought when I read Unknown Boston Number is that I'm going to be offered the job. It must be the sheer depth of my desperation making an optimist and a fool out of me. For a moment, I see myself holding back tears as I accept an appointment letter. I would like to thank the Academy, my roommate, and the girl who runs the What Would Marie Do account, my rocks during the harrowing years of grad school. I owe this to you. It makes the fall back to reality that much harder.
Do you know someone named Gregory Smith?
Whoever's on the other end of the line sounds so angry, I briefly forget how to talk.
I sure hope so, because there are 40 unread texts from you on his phone. And if you're his stalker, he'll still do. He was brought here an hour ago for emergency dental surgery, and we need someone to come pick him up.
Pick him up?
Yes, it means that you come here, get him, then take him where he lives.
She's speaking very slowly. If I told her about my doctoral degree, she would not believe me.
With a vehicle such as a car, or a wheelbarrow for all I care.
I don't own a car,
and I don't know where he lives. Can't you call him an Uber and—
Honey, he's drugged out of his mind. I cannot let him walk out of here alone. He just mumbled something about walking into the Charles River to hang out with Aquaman.
I close my eyes. Then I open them. I glance at the lecture I've been preparing. Then at the time, 6:42 p.m. Then at Hedgy glaring at me from the kitchen counter. I sigh and hear myself ask, "Where are you located?" 11. Centripetal force. If Greg were a dog, he'd be peeing all over the waiting room. In my 27 years, no one has been happier to see me. He leaps, albeit sluggishly, out of his chair, tries and fails to spin me around, effusively compliments my stained, "May the mass times acceleration be with you," shirt, and finally sandwiches my face in his palms and says,
"I'm about to blow your mind, Elsie.
Did you know that quinoa is not a grain? It's like a sprout."
"Oh my God, let's do the Harlem Shake."
Behind the reception counter, the nurse shakes her head and mutters,
"High like a hot air balloon."
"I thank you for calling me." She looks less pissed than she sounded on the phone, but more exhausted. The place smells like mint, potpourri, and that air hygienists blow into the mouth during cleanings.
"Sure. Get this idiot out of my waiting room, please. I gotta go home and feed my own brood of idiots."
"Of course." I smile reassuringly at Greg, who's petting a strand of hair that escaped my bun. "Like I said, I don't know his home address. Do you have it in your paperwork? Or I could bring him to my place."
"I've got it."
I turn to the door, even though I'm well familiar with the voice. From the past 3 days of interviewing. From my worst fears. From that weird, intrusive dream I had last night. Greg's already running to his brother, giving him the same unabashed welcome he gave me. My first thought is a familiar one. I can't believe they're related. If they played siblings in an HBO Max miniseries, I'd call bullshit on the casting director. My second is, of course, fuck. Fucking fuck. Why is he here? I look to the nurse. Did you call both of us to pick Greg up?
Yep, because the first person I called was his mom, who told me she'd be here in 15 and then canceled because of a Manny appointment.
Her lifted eyebrow is 100% judgment. I blame her 0%.
I decided to hedge my bets.
Right, I say. Greg yaps on about his fantabulous quinoa discovery, and I don't want to meet Jack's eyes. I cannot bear for him to see me, not after yesterday's mess at Monica's and that last look.
Understandable.
I smile weakly at the nurse. Then I turn, meticulously keeping my eyes on Greg. Your big bro's here to take you home, so I'm leaving. I'll call tomorrow when you're feeling better and—
Oh no.
Greg looks at me like I'm pouring liquid glue on a brown pelican.
You can't leave. That'd be awful.
But you have to come.